Welcome back. You're joining France 24 Debate for a special edition. Done deal for some, close but not quite over the line for others. After so many false starts since the last ceasefire 14 months ago, a deal at hand for guns to go silent in the Gaza Strip. Could the difference be the imminent return of Donald Trump, which comes on top of the fall of Assad in Syria and the pummeling of Iran proxy Hezbollah at the hands of Israel? What leverage for Israel? What is leverage for Hamas? And who to pick up the pieces of a conflict that's killed tens of thousands and a territory largely destroyed? Scenes of a joy in the Gaza Strip, even before the official confirmation of an agreement that has to be rubber-stamped by Israel's cabinet on Thursday. A truce would prove a moment of truth for Benjamin Netanyahu. Do his personal fortunes depend on prolonging the war? Is this a window of opportunity perhaps to pivot away from the far right and prolong the political shelf life of what is already Israel's longest-serving leader? Today in the France 24 debate, the terms and conditions of a Gaza truce. Joining us from Tel Aviv, columnist and retired Israeli diplomat, Alan Pincus. Many thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Thank you, Francois.
From Naplouse in the West Bank, where there's been a fresh strike this Wednesday in the West Bank. We'll talk maybe more about that shortly. Francesca Bori, a journalist for Italian newspaper La Repubblica. Welcome back to the show. Welcome back from Washington. Michael Pregent, senior fellow at the Hudson Institute think tank. Thanks for being with us just a few days out from Donald Trump's inauguration.
Thanks for having me.
Douglas Herbert is from our international affairs desk. Thanks for being with us. So many attempts, so many dashed hopes. This time, a deal is at hand, it seems. Correspondent Noga Tarnopovsky is with us from Jerusalem. Noga, first off, what's in the draft agreement that you saw?
The draft agreement that I saw has a first phase, which should start 24 hours after this deal is ratified, and includes the release of 33 out of Israel's 98 hostages in Gaza, the release from Israeli jails of between 30 and 50 Palestinian prisoners for each Israeli hostage who is released, and the permission for displaced Gazans who have been shunted to the center and south of the Strip to return to where their homes once were in the north. All of that in a period of a truce that would start lasting a week, then 2 weeks, and eventually the full 42 days.
The full 42 days, and there would then be a phase two and a phase three.
That's right. On the 16th day of the initial 42 days, negotiations are supposed to start on phase two. That's the part that has so many Israeli families really, really nervous, because if those negotiations fail, and there are reasons to believe that Netanyahu's ministers, who are likely to pass this first phase tomorrow through the cabinet, but are very unlikely to give up further concessions that would involve the Israeli army fully retiring, fully withdrawing from Gaza, and even allowing at least the hint of conversations about a future administration for Gaza involving Arab nations, whose condition for coming in to help rebuild Gaza is a path towards a Palestinian state. That's very unlikely to get by his cabinet. And that's the reason for this mixed, hopeful, mournful feeling among the Israeli families of hostages, hoping to see their loved ones alive, hoping in some cases to bury those who are dead, but fearful that this deal will be truncated just at the end of phase one.
Francesca Bori, we were showing earlier images of celebrations in the Gaza Strip. In the West Bank, have you heard any cheering where you are?
Total silence. I'm in Nablus, and the very moment, you know, of when Qatar announced the ceasefire deal, There was an airstrike in Jenin, 30 minutes ago, and with four new dead. And the world today doesn't end and just changes. And silence here, I'm in a resistance stronghold. I'm among fighters, actually. Nothing, first of all, because this is a place where usually you spare your bullets. You don't waste, your munitions. And for the future, you never know. But the point is, first of all, there's now that Gaza is over, Palestinians here in the West Bank feel guilty because, of course, no one, here did anything for Gaza, and not even demonstrations. I'm not just speaking of, an uprising or whatever, nothing, not even peaceful demonstrations, and not even, a new government or a proposal, for a new government in Gaza, nothing. So Palestinians here feel very guilty, of course. And the point is, they know very well that now is the turn of the West Bank. So if Gaza, is over, now is the moment of the West Bank with the settlers, with everything. And probably, the withdrawal from Gaza, the full annexation of the West Bank. This is,
That's the fear. That's the fear where you are. So, Alan Pincus, interesting. You have scenes of joy after that initial announcement out of Doha in Gaza. We saw images of a rather solemn vigil in Tel Aviv for families of Israeli hostages, and anxiety, Francesca Bori is describing, in the West Bank. Alan Pincus, do you believe that this deal will stick, first of all?
Yes.
It's a question for Alan Pincus.
What Noga Tarnopolsky said, the fear is that it would be truncated. The key here is the durability of the ceasefire. There's a reason why this deal is being phased. So each side could see the other's seriousness and adherence to the letter of the agreement. On the other hand, any such agreement that is phased exposes itself to a faltering ceasefire. And that is probably the most pressing issue, from which the second issue derives. And that is, there were two reports today that the U.S. Provided Hamas with assurances that Israel will not resume the fighting and will move on or proceed into the second phase. Now, I cannot independently verify how the accuracy of this. I don't know which administration. We're seeing something extraordinarily peculiar here, and that is that two administrations are dealing with this simultaneously. I just hope that they're somehow coordinated, and I'd like to think that they are.
Well, we saw our White House correspondent see Susan Wiles, Trump's incoming chief of staff, enter a meeting in the White House in the last hour.
Right. So that's a good indication, because whatever the Biden administration thinks it deserves credit for, the Trump administration is going to have to live with or manage in the next week and months. And you were right in your introduction that the game changer here was Trump. It wasn't Trump as much as the date, 20th of January, inauguration. That was on Mr. Netanyahu's mind since November. He would never, ever have agreed to this this would not be an election year, or had Kamala Harris won. This is hypothetical. But going back to your question, the reason people are somewhat tentative and suspect is because they don't think either side is going to maintain the ceasefire, which means, and Noga was right about the 33 Israeli hostages, but they too will not come in one batch. It's not as if that Sunday 33 Israelis, according to the agreement according to the details that I know, that group of 33 hostages is also going to be divided into smaller groups that will trickle into Israel every few days. And so there's a reason why these families are apprehensive and anxious.
Alan, you penned a column in Israeli newspaper Haaretz this Wednesday, in which you state this is the same deal we saw last spring.
It is. I'll tell you more than that. It was there in March of 2024. That's almost a year ago. That's 10 months ago. Again in May, if you recall, if our viewers recall, President Biden stood up and read an outline of an agreement that he said was presented to him by no other than Mr. Netanyahu, who 96 hours, 4 days later, reneged on the agreement and said, no, that's not what I meant. Biden was selective in what he had quoted. Okay. And again, that's very same agreement that we're seeing today was presented in July, and it was rehashed again, rekindled in August. Every time Israel had an excuse, every time Hamas wouldn't play ball, every time the Qataris did their best to get the sides together and the Biden administration said it was pushing, which in retrospect, it was not. It you know, try and change the narrative that Trump did what Biden couldn't do. It's going to be very difficult to change that narrative because that's what people believe now. So, yeah, this agreement could have been reached several times. I'll even be cynical if you allow me to. Had the 20th amendment to the U.S. Constitution from 1933 not determined January 20th as the inauguration day, but say December 20th, you would have at least 25 Israeli soldiers and at least 150 Palestinians still alive today.
All right, so Trump
it was all directed, all planned toward the 20th of January by Mr. Netanyahu.
And before going to Doha last week, Donald Trump's nominee for Middle East envoy was at his Mar-a-Lago, Florida estate, Bronx-born real estate mogul Steve Witkoff, who listened as the president-elect reiterated his word of warning to interested parties.
If those hostages aren't back, I don't want to hurt your negotiation. If they're not back by the time I get into office, all hell will break out in the Middle East. And it will not be good for Hamas, and it will not be good, frankly, for anyone.
Michael Pregent, a lot of people who don't follow the Middle East very closely think that Donald Trump is always ready to give Netanyahu whatever he wants. Turns out it's not the case.
No, I don't think it is. And I think what will be very telling is what three hostages are released on day one when this goes into effect. It's three hostages, and then it's another seven. I think it's another four hostages on day seven. And that would literally be 2 days into Trump's presidency. If Hamas releases what we believe are three remaining American Israeli hostages on day one, that gives Hamas an argument that Trump should not respond. Meaning Trump put out that threat, release all American hostages by January 20th. And that's what he meant. He didn't mean all Israeli hostages. He meant the American hostages. And we believe out of the seven, only three are alive. So if Hamas releases three American hostages on day one, that may put Israel in a tougher spot where the Trump administration says, victory, we got the Americans out, and puts pressure on Netanyahu not to resume military operations. So that's what I'll be looking for.
And the calculus is not only about the United States, Michael. Hamas, its backers from Iran are weakened. Its allies from Hezbollah are on the ropes. At this point in time, do they have an alternative to a deal?
Well, see, that's where I think the Trump administration, you know, 5 days from now, will be able to put pressure on Tehran, pressure that the Biden administration has not put on Tehran. Tehran is isolated. We've seen Hezbollah's military capabilities degraded to the point where they can no longer operate at the company level or battalion level. We've seen the degradation, of course, of Hamas, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, the Houthis, and the Iraqi militias are pretty much the last one standing. Iran is isolated. The Trump administration is going to have a Middle East policy that's very simple. If it hurts Iran, they're going to do it. If it helps Israel and Saudi Arabia, they're going to do it. And those countries in the middle will find themselves very small in comparison to those three countries I just mentioned.
And so there's still a lot of, how should we put it, volatility, even as we see those live images upon the announcement that a deal is has been struck. The Israeli government insisting it's not finalized yet. We still have the cabinet that's due to vote on it on a Thursday. And every time there's been a talk of prisoner for hostages swaps over the last 14 months, it's played on the nerves of the loved ones of Shirley Bibas, her husband Yarden, their children Ariel, now 5, and Kafir, will turn 2 on Saturday, were kidnapped October 7th of 2023 in the Nir Oz kibbutz and taken to Gaza. You were telling us earlier, Noga Tarnopovsky, that the family put out a statement.
Family did put out a statement today. They have become almost symbolic of this entire Israeli tragedy, with those two small babies, redheaded, carried in their sobbing mother's arms. And they have been really treated like rag dolls by the rumor industry, and even, I'd say, by the Israeli government, that has allowed these kind of speculations, has even leaked sometimes that we're coming close to a deal only to pull back. And today they put out a statement really begging the media not to pay attention to any rumors, saying they know that their family members' names are on some of the lists that have been distributed, but they know of no list, and that they have known crushing disappointment, repeated disappointment, and asking people to really stay away from making any definitive statements until it is definitive.
Yeah, and on the other side, in the Gaza Strip, people had been on tenterhooks all day. The killing hadn't stopped. 15 reportedly dying in an Israeli airstrike overnight in the central Gaza town of Deir al-Bala, in a territory where 90% of the population is displaced. It's a long wait for the guns to go silent, like, for instance, in the southern city of Khan Yunis.
I hope, God willing, that the news of the truce that we hear about, God willing, is true and we return to our homes and our places safely, that things resolve a little and life returns the way it was before and better. I hope that our children return to their schools and return to their old lives. Enough suffering and pain, enough. We didn't live, I mean, a year or two of our lives have been wasted for nothing.
A wasted year. In Ramallah Tuesday evening, Francesca Bori, there was a rally organized by families of some of the thousands of Palestinians held in Israeli prisons. There, too, there's been hopes for some to those hopes, that it's still a waiting game for them, too.
Yes, of course. I mean, prisoners for Palestinians are, you know, also a symbolic issue, because nearly everyone here has been in jail. And of course, you know, but again, you know, it's a little bit like the first, you know, ceasefire last November. For Palestinian prisoners, you know, this freedom will come really, you know, at an unbearable price. I don't think we will see, you know, celebrations. Well, the Palestinian Authority is also prohibiting, you know, celebrations and everything that might be, you know, viewed as a success for Hamas, even if, honestly, I don't think, you know, Palestinians view any success, you know, for Hamas.
With the Hamas decimated, what's the Palestinian Authority's a position when it looks ahead, as it because there was talk, and we'll hear a clip of him in a moment, of the outgoing U.S. Secretary of State talking about what it will take to distribute aid, to be able to have a common government between Gaza and the West Bank. What exactly are there plans? Are there preparations underway for a day after on the Palestinian side?
Yes, absolutely. There's still a press embargo on this, absolutely. And that's why I say that I'm pretty sure that the deal will last until phase three, absolutely. Because, of course, you know, the difference, this is exactly the same agreement of last May and last July. The difference is not so much, you know, Trump. The difference is the international context, of course, you know. In between, you know, there was the killing of Hezbollah, of Nasrallah, you know, and basically the fall of Hezbollah, and then, of course, you know, the killing of Yahya Sinwar. I mean, the international context, Syria, all changed. And the other difference is that, you know, there is sort of an agreement about, you know, the day after. In the last months, there's been a Jenin, you know, a battle, literally speaking, between the Palestinian Authority and the Jenin Brigades, which doesn't mean between, you know, Palestinian Authority and Hamas, because the Jenin Brigades are, you know, a mixed group of fighters, including Fatah fighters. And the Palestinian Authority is trying to prove to everybody, to the international community, that, you know, is able to rule Gaza, basically, and to still rule Ramallah. That's not the case. And actually, the agreement, the ceasefire agreement, speaks about, you know, deep change in the Palestinian Authority. And this is what we will see, I guess, you know, with the technical administration in Gaza. That's why I think, you know, that's why we had the agreement, actually, the ceasefire agreement, because there is a view for the future, a view for the future, you know, government of Palestinians, but also, broadly speaking, you know, for the Middle East.
Alan Pincus, you agree there is a plan? It's a question for Alan Pincus.
A plan for what exactly? I didn't understand where the plan is.
How to administer the Palestinian territories? How to have?
You mean an Israeli plan? If I understood correctly.
Well, the Palestinian Authority. We heard the remarks by U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken about how to have the Palestinians police themselves, how to distribute aid. His speech before the Atlantic Council think tank on Tuesday, he also talked about how there would have to be a mix between civil society and political entities that doesn't include Hamas.
It never ceases to amaze me how flat the American learning curve is on the Netanyahu government. None of this is implementable. None of this is viable. None of this will ever happen as long as this particular government headed by Netanyahu is in power. The Americans gave it their best shot. President Biden presented the plan, the outline of the plan that Secretary of State Blinken presented yesterday. Biden presented in December of 2023. Then Vice President Kamala Harris, in a speech in Dubai, went into further details in January. And they did it again and again and again, and they were rebuffed by Mr. Netanyahu time and time again. As long as he is the prime minister, it doesn't matter who the American president is. It could be Trump. It could be Biden. It could be you. This is not going to happen. The coalition structure in Israel prevents this. Netanyahu's ideology prevents this. His current coalition's messianic delusions prevent this. This is just not going to happen.
So, are you suggesting that Benjamin Netanyahu's staying power is stronger than any pressure that can be applied by a U.S. president?
Oh, no. I think that the United States of America did not apply pressure. You saw that for almost 15 months, so-called American pressure, there was no real pressure, but so-called American pressure produced nothing. Yet President-elect Trump goes into the arena, says three times, I want this wrapped up, says there's hell to be had if it won't happen. Sends his real estate partner, Steve Witkoff, to Israel. Lo and behold, it's being done. Now, it's obviously more complicated than that. The military is happy with this. The outgoing defense minister said that the war exhausted its usefulness. Mr. Netanyahu went into this war with no political objectives, but only military objectives, and those that are attainable were already attained. If Mr. Trump decides that this is a priority for him, which I doubt he will, he has other things on his mind and on his table and his agenda, but if he does and is willing to exert pressure on Israel, by all means, it'll work. No question about it. But Mr. Netanyahu is under the impression that he can manipulate Trump as he manipulated Biden. We'll have to wait and see if he's right or wrong.
Michael Pregen, will Donald Trump pay attention to this issue once he's in office?
U.S. issues when it comes to this. It's the Philadelphia corridor that needs to be maintained. That is a U.S. security issue. That Hamas plays no role in the next governing body in Gaza. That's a U.S. position that is held by the incoming National Security Advisor and by the incoming Secretary of Defense once they go through confirmation. The other part of that is, of course, that Hamas is degraded. We heard Anthony Blinken say something that was pretty telling. He said that Hamas has already been able to recruit 17 to 20,000 fighters that they lost during this conflict, basically erasing 17,000 to 20,000 fatalities in that 40,000 number, meaning that the Israeli Defense Forces had a one-to-one ratio of combatant to civilian in Gaza, which is very telling. Hamas has red lines too. Hamas wants Israel out of the Philadelphia corridor. Hamas wants to be part of the incoming government. Hamas has 20,000 fighters. Hamas will continue. That cannot happen. Also, there's the issue of Qatar. Qatar continues to provide funding to designated terrorist groups that the U.S. is going to have a problem with, to include Hamas. And Qatar can play no role in funding Gaza reconstruction, because all that money will go again to the reconstruction of tunnels and to a terrorist network, whether it calls itself Hamas or the next iteration of Hamas. Those are the U.S. positions.
All right, let's stay in Washington and cross now to Ahmed Fouad Al-Khatib, a Gaza native who's been very critical of Hamas on this program and who is resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council think tank. Thank you for joining us here in the France 24 debate. Ahmed, we saw images of celebrations in the southern Gaza city of Khan Yunis. Are you celebrating?
Well, I've shared yesterday on X that there's a difference between jubilation that the war is potentially coming to an end and that people have a chance at life and that people are hopefully going to turn one of the most bloody chapters, if not the bloodiest chapter in the Israel and Palestine conflict and in the history of the people of Gaza. But that is entirely separate from celebration. No one is celebrating 75% of Gaza's buildings being partially or fully destroyed, the destruction of Gaza's infrastructure, whether it relates to healthcare or schools or the educational system. We have students that have been out of school now for 2 years, both elementary education and higher education, and they have nothing to go back to. There's nothing to celebrate when you have tens of thousands of deaths, when everybody in Gaza knows someone who has been killed or wounded in this attack. I've lost 33 of my immediate and extended family members. I was able to...
seem to have lost the connection there, unfortunately, with Washington and Ahmed Fouad Al-Khatib. Well, you're back. Ahmed, can you hear us?
Yes, sorry.
You had lost 33 of your close ones.
Precisely. And so when you look at the fatalities, when you look at the destruction, when you look at the degradation of the Palestinian National Project, no one is celebrating where we're at. Of course, Hamas and the idiots in the Qatari state-run media known as Al Jazeera will absolutely turn this into a celebration and some kind of a Stalingrad or a Leningrad-like victory when the people in Gaza are cursing Hamas. They are cursing anybody who had a hand in starting the war with the October 7th attack. So unfortunately, I think we're in a place right now where we're somewhat back to where we were when this started. Yes, Hamas is tactically degraded. but strategically, they're very much so in control. I was in the room at the Atlantic Council where I work, where Secretary Blinken spoke yesterday, and I spoke to him beforehand when he gave his farewell address and discussed Gaza. And I was there when he shared his assessment that Hamas has been able to recruit as many as it has lost, something that was echoed by a piece the day before in the Wall Street Journal, which shared that there's a second Sinwar, and that is Yahya Sinwar's brother, Mohammed, who has eluded Israeli intelligence and the military airstrikes. And so we're in a disastrous situation of epic proportions. However, at least we can begin to hope to do in peacetime and peace being a relative term here, because we still don't have all the frameworks, all the details, rather, finalized. We have a framework. We don't have a time for when the deal begins. We don't even have all the phases in place. We don't even know if this is going to hold. But we have a relative pathway towards temporary peace that could hopefully evolve into durable peace in Gaza. And peace in this context is the absence of war, and that can maybe help us initiate transformation, Gaza's rejuvenation and recovery, and to reconstitute Gaza. I don't want to just see Gaza reconstructed only for it to be under Hamas's dominion, only for it to be destroyed in, you know, 5 or 10 years from now. Gaza needs a renaissance. Gaza needs to make sure, we need to make sure we
so,
being
so who can do that, Ahmed? Because in the past it was Qatar and the other Gulf monarchies who footed the bill for reconstruction. Who's the one who can rebuild Gaza?
I think at this point, it's unclear, obviously, who can do that.
Oh, we seem to have lost Ahmed Fouad Al-Khatib again. Apologies for that. We'll try to reconnect shortly. And Alan Pincus, talk there in that, from what Ahmed was saying us about the contours of the plan being unclear. The Reuters news agency in the last minutes filing out of Cairo stating that Israel, under the terms of the deal, would have to be out of that Philadelphia corridor that separates the Gaza Strip from Egypt by day 50. If I follow up on what you were saying earlier, day 50 is a century away.
Well, day 50 is a century away, and it's 8 days beyond what the plan, the original framework, at least the original outline that I saw, relates to. Look, the Philadelphia corridor is not Omaha Beach, and it is not Stalingrad, and it is not Gettysburg. It is a 9-mile road that should be demilitarized, that the Egyptians and the Israelis were, alternating in terms of controlling. It is not the be-all and end-all of this entire thing. Now, that Israel insists on a presence there is absolutely legitimate and justifiable. That it's a deal-breaker, that's absolutely not true. By the way, the Philadelphia corridor, that 14-kilometer, 9-mile approximately stretch, leading from Rafah in the southeast to the Mediterranean, to the Mwasi Mediterranean beach in the very southwest of Gaza. That was the reason given by Netanyahu in May and again in July on why this deal could not be reached. And now all of a sudden, he's willing to give most of it up. This is not clear to me at all.
It's not clear to you at all. Alan Pincus, is there going to be, we can call up the map there and you see that the Gaza Strip and the Philadelphia corridor, again, it's that little tiny sliver that touches Egypt at the bottom of the map. Alan Pincus, people wrote off Benjamin Netanyahu after October 7th, saying not only has he got a trial, but now after this massive intelligence lapse, he's ready for the chop. Turns out he's still around and he's, some would argue, stronger than ever. So what does he do? Does he ditch his far-right coalition partners and find new partners with which to govern?
Well, he could do that, or even though he may choose to go for an election, but he is on an ongoing criminal trial. He He is in the midst of providing his own testimony, which is not looking good for him, even though I don't pretend to be one of the judges. Look, I was one of the ones who thought he would never survive October 7th. By the way, nor should he have. This is outrageous. This is an abomination that he never took responsibility for this calamity, for the worst debacle in Israel's history since 1948. Not once did he take responsibility. He blames everyone. He blames the military. He blames the intelligence. He blames Biden. He blames the Iran. He blames everyone except being held accountable to being the man on whose watch this happened. Now, I'm not sure that this government is disintegrating. You know, the political journalists, they finally they have something to do, so they're building up these castles in the sand of all kinds of coalition crises and so on. I there are three possibilities here, and I know we're way premature, but because you asked, there are three possibilities. One is the coalition stays intact, but it has a major hurdle to overcome with the conscription of the ultra-Orthodox. That is tearing Israeli society apart, and the war just exacerbated it. The second possibility is that Netanyahu tries a reshuffle. He gets rid of the messianic lunatics from the right wing, and he brings in two centrist parties. That should be enough to cross the 60 members of parliament out of the 120. I don't know who's going to join, but there are candidates who would be willing to, for the sake of the country and being patriots and all that, yes, we'll go into the government in exchange for him promising not to pursue the constitutional coup. The third possibility is that within 6 months he calls for an early election, and then the deck is reshuffled altogether.
All right, so lots of possibilities. Just we talked about that testimonial speech a few days before Antony Blinken exits as U.S. Secretary of State that he gave in Washington on Tuesday. Again, he talked up this framework for Palestinians to fill the power vacuum in Gaza. And he issued a warning ahead of what would come later in the day, the Biden administration extension of a procedure to sanction extremist settlers in the West Bank.
In the West Bank, Israel is expanding official settlements and nationalizing land at a faster clip than any time in the last decade, while turning a blind eye to unprecedented growth in illegal outposts. Violent attacks by extremist settlers against Palestinian civilians have reached record levels. We've long made the point to the Israeli government that Hamas cannot be defeated by...
All right, we're going to cross... break out of that and go straight to Qatar and listen to the Qatari spokesperson for the foreign ministry.
But the two parties to the conflict have reached an agreement for a ceasefire. The situation up until a ceasefire, and then in order to allow delivery of humanitarian aid to our Palestinian brothers. Mr. Steve Witkoff, the special envoy of the president-elect and the coordinator for North Africa and the Middle East, to reach this agreement. We also thank the representative of Egypt, Mr. Hassan al-Assad, His Excellency, the minister, who seriously contributed to cooperation with us, the Qataris, in order to reach this agreement. With the agreement of the two parties to the conflict, to finalize the last executive measures this evening. Then their measures on Israel have been adopted, and the agreement will come into effect on Sunday, 19 January. With regard to the details, the first phase will last 42 days with the withdrawal of Israeli forces far from residential dwellings to the, on the borders, with exchanges of hostages and prisoners,
and
also we will facilitate the movement of the injured and the ill. There will also be part of the stage regarding humanitarian aid, hospitals, bakeries, and civilian defense. As well,
will
help to get housing for those who lost their homes. 33 hostages shall be released, including children, the elderly, in exchange for Palestinian prisoners. With regard to the second and third phases, negotiations for the third phase will be finalized during the first stage. These three stages will be complied with by the two parties in order to reach fair and overall peace. And Qatar will continue to work with Egypt and the United States of America in order to guarantee that the parties will comply with their commitments with regard to the following stages. With regard to the efforts made at a regional and international level,
ودولة قطر لن تدخر جهدا في تقديم الدعم لأهالينا من الأسر المنكوبة في قطاع غزة وكل ما يلزم رفع معاناة
will play a role in this field in order to mitigate the suffering of the inhabitants of Gaza.
Since 8
October, we in Qatar have spared no
effort للوصول لهذه
instructions of our emir. We have done everything to reach this moment.
Mediation has
been crowned with success last November with the release of hostages and prisoners, and we are continuing to work in order to put an end to this war, to reach
future and a dream
for a better future.
واليوم وصلنا إلى هذه اللحظة المنتظرة ولكنها بداية والمسؤولية الآن تقع على عاتق الأطراف بدعم من الوسطاء والمجتمع الدولي للعبور إلى بر السلام
وهذا ما ستنصب عليه جهودنا في المرحلة المقبلة. We, as partners, will work in this field, and I must also thank all the regional and international partners for their support, for their efforts, right up until we reach this agreement. In conclusion, I must emphasize to our brothers and friends in Gaza to say that Qatar will continue to help them.
أمير البلاد المفدى
with the patronage of His Excellency,
سواء كان ليلا نهارا وساعة بساعة ودقيقة بدقيقة
who night and day is following developments in the situation, and
thanks
to God, we have reached this very important point, and we want this to be the last page in the book of this war, and we hope all the parties will comply with all the points in this agreement and will commit to carrying out the measures in the agreement. Qatar will continue to work with its partners in order to ensure that this agreement will be applied completely in order to reach a peaceful situation in Gaza. Thank you very much.
سؤال أول Sky News.